This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's Friday. That's when it gets loaded. Of course, you don't have to be listening to this on a Friday. You could listen to it anytime you want. Such is the joy of podcasts. It's not like having to be near a radio at a particular time or anything. You could just download these podcasts and listen to them whenever you wish. And a lot more people are doing so. And I'm hearing from a lot of you. And I really, really appreciate it. So please send me your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. I've got a couple of questions here. And I appreciate all the questions as usual. John writes, Dear Layla, could you discuss the calculation of cholesterol? Someone with a very high HDL, but has a higher total count of cholesterol, but the ratio would be better, would it not? And I wanted to also follow up. Kristen had another follow-up question from last week that I didn't get into. I'm getting into it here about cholesterol and trying to explain it to our patients, you know. We explain to them, as Kristen describes, that the USDA guidelines have been amended to not be so concerned about dietary cholesterol anymore, and that cholesterol only becomes a problem when it's oxidized. And patients then continually ask, well, then why did my cholesterol go down when I cut out butter, beef, and whole milk? Well, guess what? The whole milk also contains lactose, so you cut out some sugar. That helps the cholesterol come down. And of course, any dietary cholesterol, when people stop eating cholesterol foods, what can happen is that the biochemistry of cholesterol will come down, but it should eventually normalize. But if they're replacing all the fats that they're letting go of, or the cholesterol foods, with higher carbohydrate foods, yeah, their cholesterol may go down because now they're on a lower fat diet, but that HDL went down too. So if eating a higher fat cholesterol rich diet gave you an HDL of say 75, but now you go on a low cholesterol, low fat diet, now your HDL has come down to 50. What good is that? And that doesn't help the ratio, which is the question that John is asking about. So doctors still look at a total cholesterol and start to say, oh, you know, you should really go on a statin. Your cholesterol is over 200. But how much of that is HDL? And that's very, very important. We like seeing HDL in the 70s or so. Definitely. The guideline is definitely over 40 for men and over 50 for women. Why are the guidelines different for women, men and women? Because we react differently to, you know, what can cause. Our risk factors present differently for coronary artery disease. So somebody who's cutting out cholesterol-laden foods, yeah, their cholesterol will come down. But, very important. For those who are embarking on a lower carb diet in an effort for their cholesterol to go down, which is the right way to do it, and eat higher fat foods, cholesterol-containing foods, which we know that cholesterol operates on a negative feedback loop. What that means is when we are taking in enough dietary cholesterol, the liver doesn't have to churn out as much. Remember that the liver churns out 80% of the cholesterol that we need. And why? Let me remind you, it's a necessary repair substance. It's necessary for brain function and hormone balance. It's a critical component of cell membranes. And it's necessary for the production of vitamin D. And be reminded that arterial plaques are found to contain mostly unsaturated fats secondary to the oxidation and free radical damage. High blood sugars, AGEs, advanced glycation end products, these are the things that will oxidize the LDL. So for those who are claiming, well, my cholesterol went down when I cut out the fat and I cut out the cholesterol-rich foods. Yes, but again, so did your HDL. You've also lost your protection. And that ratio of HDL to LDL is much, much more important than your total cholesterol number. Another thing, if you're avoiding cholesterol-rich, high-fat foods, and, you know, when we embark on a low-fat diet, we are almost forced to eat more carbohydrates because you can't just subsist on vegetables and fruits alone. It's just not enough. So you're going to have more higher carbohydrate foods. Your cholesterol may go down. Unfortunately, that very beneficial HDL goes down, right? But that LDL number will come down, okay, but your LDL particle will change. If you had a big, fat, buoyant pattern A LDL particle, which is what you want a big, fat, buoyant LDL particle because that particle is less likely to get caught in the nooks and crannies in your arteries and cause plaque, cause obstruction. On a low-fat, higher-carb diet, your LDL pattern will now turn to a pattern B, which is not beneficial at all. Small, dense, pattern B LDLs will be more apt to cause obstruction, cause arterial plaque. So, yeah, you lower your total cholesterol number, but you didn't eliminate any of your risk factor for coronary artery disease because now you have less HDL, which means now you have a smaller garbage truck to get rid of the bad stuff, and you've changed your LDL pattern for the worse. So going on a lower fat, low cholesterol diet is not helpful for risk factors. I know we're still explaining it till we're blue in the face. Really, all of my colleagues, you know, the cholesterol is still an issue for a lot of people, even though we remind them that, you know what? It really doesn't matter as much. It's about the particle size, and it's also about how much of that LDL is being oxidized, because that's a much more important number. For instance, oxidized LDL reference ranges is basically 9 to 44 units per liter, okay? Because high LDL by itself is not the risk factor. It's the oxidized LDL. A high risk is if you have a number between 60 and 79. Low risk is if your oxidized LDL is less than 45, okay? So keep that in mind. And more about cholesterol, its importance. The liver wouldn't make 80% of it if our bodies didn't need it. It's classified as an antioxidant. Infants need cholesterol for proper brain development. Cholesterol synthesis is necessary for all of our cell membranes. We need it for vitamin D. It protects against radiation damage and toxins. It also protects red blood cells against hemolysis caused by heat and other harmful agents. And keep in mind that there are dangers to very low cholesterol. This is worth repeating. I talked about cholesterol last October. If you wanted to back up to a podcast, I think it was October 16, 2015, last year, where I went more into detail about this. But it merits mentioning again. The danger of very low cholesterol, dementia, depression, moodiness, aggressive behavior. And keep in mind that the Framingham Heart Study, that very important heart study, found that those with desirable cholesterol levels, which would be less than 200, right? Well, those people who have a less than 200 total cholesterol, they scored lower on verbal fluency, attention and concentration, and scored lower on abstract reasoning than those with higher cholesterol levels. Also, other dangers of very low cholesterol: increased mortality from cancer, infections, and suicide. What's a very low cholesterol? Less than 160. I know your cardiologist loves to see your total cholesterol at 127, which is what a statin will do. But did you know that that statin will also cause diabetes, especially in women? Not a good thing. So, cholesterol metabolism requires vitamin C for its conversion into bile. We need to make sure we're getting nutrients, and that bile is necessary for absorbing fat-soluble nutrients like vitamins A, D, E, and K, CoQ10, alpha-lipoic acid, and EPA and DHA, okay? And low levels of vitamin C in the body will inhibit normal cholesterol metabolism. All right. So, with regard to John's question about the ratio is indeed more important. So if what you've done is put yourself on a low-fat, low-cholesterol diet and your total cholesterol, say, came down from 238 to 180, that really doesn't tell us anything at all. How far did the HDL come down? What has now happened to your LDL particle size? And by the way, it takes a full 3 months for cholesterol numbers to change when you've made a dietary change. For example, if your cholesterol is high and you're doing the right thing and embarking on a lower carbohydrate diet, right, it takes a full 3 months. So when you embark on that low carbohydrate diet, don't go running back to your doctor or cardiologist 4 to 6 weeks into your low carb diet to have your cholesterol checked again. You've got to wait a full 3 months. Why? Because in the beginning, your biochemistries are undergoing change. There's been a dietary change. There's going to be all kinds of shifts before it begins to normalize. And that normalization takes a solid 3 months. So you must wait 3 months before having another lipid profile. And look at your particle size, because you're going to be very, very happy. If you were somebody who had small, dense pattern B, LDL, that's going to shift and change into big, buoyant pattern A. Okay? Thank you very, very much for your questions, Kristen and John. I've got another question here from Eva. She writes, I've been told that iodized table salt raises blood pressure and that sea salt does not. What is the truth? Well, it's not true. So whoever told you that was misinformed. The real lowdown on sea salt versus table salt. First of all, it's very important for people to be aware that sea salt will contain as much sodium, just about, as table salt. Okay. And that you're still putting yourself at risk if you have sodium-sensitive high blood pressure. The difference between sea salt and table salt is in the way that it's processed. Table salt is typically mined from underground salt deposits, and it's more heavily processed to eliminate minerals, okay? And then normally an additive is added to prevent clumping. So, and most table salt will have iodine, which is a necessary nutrient, which is all pretty much fine. Sea salt, however, is produced through the evaporation of ocean water or water from saltwater lakes. Very, very little processing is done here. And depending on where the water is sourced, this can leave behind certain trace minerals and elements. These minerals add flavor and a color to sea salt. And I think the mistake that people make, because it contains other minerals, they think that it will counteract the sodium itself in sea salt. No, it's an insignificant amount of minerals that you're getting in the very little bit of sea salt that you're using. So it can impact your blood pressure the same way that regular iodized table salt does. I like sea salt in that you're not going to find or get the type of sea salt or even the Himalayan pink salt, which is also very nice, that doesn't have any anti-caking agents in it. You don't want those additives and preservatives. Iodine is a nice idea. remember that we also get iodine from things like onions, seafood, really anything coming from the sea, and also seaweed. If you're having like kelp or a seaweed salad, if you like that kind of thing in your salad, if you like Asian cuisine in particular, you'll find that there. And don't forget, it's not all about salt and blood pressure. Because if you read our newsletter, I've got an article that talks about the DASH diet. The DASH diet actually contains more sodium than what proponents of lower sodium dieting are actually trying to push forth. They're saying that we should all consume less than 2,500 milligrams of sodium a day, but the DASH diet averages about 3,000 milligrams of daily sodium. The thing is that on the DASH type of diet, you're getting a lot more potassium foods, and it's really about the ratio of sodium to potassium that makes a much bigger impact on cardiovascular outcomes than on sodium alone. If you're on a very high salt diet, if you're eating a lot of processed foods, if you're eating sliced bread, that's a huge source of sodium right there. Not just the potato chip. It's in that sliced bread, even if it's a whole grain, believe it or not. The other thing is, sodium is really only a middleman. If you do have high blood pressure or borderline high blood pressure, and you're overweight, insulin resistant, if you take care of that by embarking on a low-carb diet, your insulin levels will come down. A high insulin is really the master and commander of how much sodium your body retains. So it's less a matter of how much sodium is in your diet, but how much circulating insulin you have that's causing you to retain all that sodium. So if your insulin comes down, you will shed that excess water. You will also shed that excess sodium. The amount of sodium in your diet will matter less on a low-carb diet because a low-carb diet has a very dehydrating effect. Thereby, it lowers the blood volume, which will decrease blood pressure. This is all good. So, I've weighed in on the iodized table salt versus sea salt. Sea salt is not necessarily better when it comes to blood pressure. They both contain the same amounts of sodium. In fact, the American Heart Association, they did a survey, and they found that 61% of respondents incorrectly agreed that sea salt is a lower sodium alternative to table salt. But the truth is that table salt and most sea salts contain about 40% sodium by weight. Now, kosher salt and some sea salts may have larger crystal sizes than table salt, so they may have less sodium by volume, like by teaspoon or tablespoon. But a teaspoon of table salt, regular table salt, has about 2,300 milligrams of sodium. But a teaspoon of sea salt or kosher salt may have less sodium because of fewer crystals fitting onto the spoon. Interesting, right? So be aware that having sea salt will not necessarily have less of an impact on your blood pressure. And you know, only 10% of people have sodium sensitive blood pressure. And as it turns out, it could be that embarking on a very low sodium diet will then kick your metabolism in a way that you become more salt sensitive. So when you reintroduce sodium, that it can further impact your blood pressure. So the proponents of low sodium in the diet aren't necessarily correct. Sodium is also a very necessary electrolyte. We need to keep that in mind, along with magnesium, calcium, and potassium. So you don't have to go too low. And when you're on a low-carb diet, you really don't have to go low at all because so many of those processed foods will not be in your diet. The chips will not be there. The bread will not be there. Keep that in mind. Eva, thank you very, very much for your question. I thank all of you for your questions. And I thank you all for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.